So, woke up on Saturday morning to spend time with JB and was thinking about how late it is. When I used to lead worship and do college ministry with JB, our staff meeting was Saturday morning at 6 o'clock at Mom's Cafe. I was in college. We'd show up at Mom's Cafe at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning for staff meeting, and we weren't allowed to talk for the first 30 minutes, which was great because I was still trying to kind of get it out, but I still remember I'd show up for staff meeting. We'd have staff meeting on Saturday morning. I'd go back home. I'd go back to bed. I'd sleep a few hours, and I'd still wake up in time for college game day. So that was kind of the experience. So good to be with you guys. Honored to be with you again. If you weren't able to be here last night, we kind of started this look at the life of Elijah, talking about running on empty. And what we said last night is running on empty is a whole lot of fun when you're driving around a parking lot of a gas station with endless provision, just trying to stretch out the fuel in your car as a game. It is not fun at all when it's the story of your life. And all of us know this experience of feeling like God's called us to something, inviting us into something that we don't have gas in the tank to accomplish. And sometimes it feels like big things. Sometimes it feels like small things. Some of us have these incredible dreams of what God could use us for. What God could do in our family, with our kids, what he could do through our personal ministry on campus, what he could do in our offices or in our neighborhood and throughout our city. But the moment comes for every single one of us when we realize we don't have what it takes to do what we feel like he's called us to do. And what we saw yesterday is that's the story of Elijah's life from beginning to end. Elijah's empty, God shows up with enough. Elijah's empty, God shows up with enough. And that's true in our lives as well. God has this tendency to do extraordinary things through empty people like you and me. Because more than God is seeking people who have supernatural skills and ability, more than he's seeking people that have everything together, more than he's seeking people whose lives are comfortable, God's seeking people whose hearts are fully his. And that's what we're going to see this morning, too, as we continue in the story of Elijah. What might be his emptiest point? This is maybe the most familiar part of Elijah's story. Things have gone incredibly well for Elijah up to this point. He's just raised a person from the dead, so that's good, you know. If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn to 1 Kings chapter 19. That's where we're going to be today. 1 Kings chapter 19 to start this morning. I wonder if you've ever been completely faked out by a Christmas present or a birthday present. That ever happened to you? You know, you're totally confident what you were about to unwrap, and then the thing that you unwrapped was not what you thought you were going to unwrap at all. You know, you picked it up and kind of felt its size and its shape. You shook it a little bit, and you were completely convinced that you knew what was inside that gift, only to open it up and realize you whiffed horribly. So, Carrie and I, on our very first Christmas as a married couple, you know, we came to Stillwater. We were with my parents, and my little brother was there. He wasn't married yet, but all of us were sitting there in the living room opening presents, and we'd gone around and done the thing, you know, opened all of the presents, and then my dad comes to this moment where he says, "I just remembered. I have another present for everyone. Let me go get it." And he ran to the bedroom. So you don't know my family, but in our family, that was always code in my family for my parents are about to surprise us with the big one. You know, the big gift, the basketball goal, the brand new bikes, you know. And the way they would do it is they would always wrap up a little package with a note that says, you know, "Go look under our bed," or something like that. And then it was always the big present. And so we start looking around, and my mom starts looking around. She's obviously not in on it, which seemed like really good news, you know, at least at first. So we started to talk about what it could be. And we pitched out a couple of ideas as Dad's off rifling through his closet trying to find the gift that he'd gotten for us. And by the time he returned, we were totally convinced the one thing that we had never done as a family, that we'd always wanted to do as a family, is go on a cruise. And so Dad comes walking back in with these little bitty gifts, and they were perfect size for cruise tickets. And we were totally convinced we were about to go on a cruise together with a family. So we tore open the boxes, wanting to be the first one to gloat, you know, that we'd guessed the present correctly. And one by one, the room got silent as we opened the boxes. My dad had gone to the store, and the store had boxer shorts on sale for 50 cents a piece. He'd gotten the family matching boxers. For my first Christmas with my new wife, she got, as her big present from my father, matching underwear for the whole family. If you know my dad, that's 100% on brand for him. There's nothing more disappointing than being totally convinced that you're about to open something you've always wanted, only to discover that it's not even close to what you thought it was going to be. That's where we find Elijah this morning. He's coming after this incredible victory. In fact, one of his greatest moments as a leader, most of the nation, including the king and queen, had turned to false gods to worship them. And God had used Elijah to eliminate those false gods, to totally humiliate them. You know, the prophets of Baal, they're all gathered together around an altar. They tried everything that they could. They couldn't wake their God up. And Elijah empties buckets of water on an altar and essentially did everything he could do in his power to make it not work so there wouldn't be any doubt who his God was. And then Elijah prays, and God sends down fire from heaven and incinerates the offering. And all of the people of Israel fall down and worship their God. The prophets of Baal are destroyed. And Elijah thinks, this is it. This is the moment I've been praying for. This is the moment I've been waiting for. This is the thing I've wanted my whole ministry, my whole life. This is the moment where the whole nation turns back to God, where God's glory and God's fame spread throughout the nation and everything gets better for the nation that I love. That's what Elijah thought he was unwrapping in the moment. But on the backside of the victory, things don't turn out like Elijah thought. Look at 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 to 10. Verse 1, now Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, how he'd killed the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And he was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah. And he left his servant there, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die. He said, it's enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's. Huge dreams. How God is going to use his life, only to realize it seems God has a different dream. Does that sound familiar to any of you? And some of you have tried your whole life, some portion of your life, to follow him. You may have trusted Christ when you were a college student, maybe as an adult or as a child, but at some point you saw these incredible visions of what God could do through you on campus, how God could use you in a family or in your family or with your children or with your parents, with the people that live around you, with your fraternity brothers or co-workers. You've prayed for it. You've asked for it. You thought you were going to get serious about your faith and your whole fraternity was going to come to Christ, transformed through your life, right? Your whole family was going to connect with him through your influence in some amazing way. But they didn't. You have a friend you've been praying for, a neighbor, a coworker you've been praying for. You've prayed for them for years, and you had them over to the house, and you finally leaned into the spiritual conversation. You finally told them your testimony, and it didn't go well. You had these dreams of how God would use you if you had the courage to step forward, to lean in. But now here you are. You showed up for what you thought would be the climax of the story. You were faithful. But now it doesn't seem like God kept his end of the bargain. You find yourself running on empty. You feel like either you failed or God failed. You're not sure who. Things sure haven't worked out the way you thought they were going to work out. That's Elijah, right here in 1 Kings chapter 19. This is not the way that this story was supposed to go, is it? I mean, 1 Kings chapter 18 was supposed to be a game changer. This was supposed to be the moment. 1 Kings chapter 18 is the way that Elijah always thought God would show up and work through his life. It's the way he'd always dreamed God would use his life. None of Elijah's ancestors had been able to get to that moment. None of them had been able to bring the country back to what God intended. But Elijah thought he was going to see it. He longed to see it. He prayed to see it. He thought he was going to see it. And people had just seen irrefutable proof that their God is the God. This was supposed to be the moment where everybody got it, where the king and the queen fell to their knees and worshiped because all of a sudden they had proof of which God they should serve. And how could you ignore proof like what he gave them? Instead, it feels like they're further away than they were before. And Elijah feels like a failure. He feels like he's let God down. Felt like God called him to do something, to be a part of something extraordinary. And it didn't work. And even though Elijah's not about to let Jezebel kill him, he's ready for God to. So he runs to familiar territory. Finds himself in the wilderness. If you've been following the story, you know that the wilderness is familiar territory for Elijah. And he asks God to take his life out there. He's tapping out. Talk about running on empty, right? But keep reading, verse 5. He lay down and slept under a juniper tree. Behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said to him, "Arise, eat." Then he looked, and behold, there was at his head a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise, eat, because the journey is too great for you." You ever had those moments where a smell or a taste of something transports you to a different time or a different place in your life? So growing up, my grandparents used to drink Folgers coffee growing up at their house out on the lake by Manford. To this day, when I smell Folgers coffee brewing, it instantly transports me back to that cabin on that lake. There is a particular smell of Polo cologne and Listerine that takes me back to the office of a certain pastor who mentored me and loved me well. It's powerful what a smell or a taste can send you back to, isn't it? Think about what Elijah has to be experiencing here as he smells bread cooking in the middle of nowhere. As he takes a drink of cold water in the middle of the wilderness. Remember back to 1 Kings 17? God provided bread and water miraculously for months. And just in case Elijah missed it, the angel of the Lord, which Bible scholars, you know this, believe is what Jesus is called in the Old Testament. He shows up in the Old Testament called the angel of the Lord. So he reminds him of something that God's been teaching him all along the way. He says, "Elijah, I'm not done with you. I'm still going to use you. But if you think the success of the journey, the thing that I've called you to, depends on you, you're going to spend the rest of your life running on empty. Elijah, if you think this journey depends on you, you're done." But that's not the design. That's never been the plan. So here's what I'm going to give you one more time, Elijah. It's like the last time I called you to a journey that was bigger than you. I'm going to give you, Elijah, enough. I'm going to give you enough for the journey, enough for what you need. Because here's the deal, Elijah. I didn't invite you to be successful. I invited you to be faithful. And it's worth, if you're taking notes, writing this down, because it's a great reminder for us. God has made us responsible for our faithfulness, not his success. He's made us responsible for our faithfulness, not his success. The same God that's able to incinerate sopping wet offerings can take care of his success. He's called us to be faithful. And here's the thing, every time, every single time, in every single situation, because it's tied to his character, God provides exactly enough for us to be faithful to our next step in whatever journey he's called us to. And Elijah remembers, and he starts walking. But there's something else he needs to learn in private before God's ready to use him again. Look at verse 8. So he arose and he ate and drank. He went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. And then he came there to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the son of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, torn down thine altars, and killed thy prophets with the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away." So God sends Elijah back to the same mountain, to Mount Horeb. Scholars think is the same mountain as Mount Sinai, where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, where the nation of Israel started, to the place that God promised the people that Elijah was leading that they would be his people and he would be their God. The very thing that hadn't happened fully yet. And maybe to the very cave, maybe from Exodus 33, where God put Moses right before his glory went past. And God says to Elijah again, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" And what does Elijah say? Says some words that sound familiar. They're exactly the same words that Elijah just said before. It's like he's saying, "That's what I'm trying to tell you, God. Like, I tried. It didn't work. I tried to be about everything that you were about with Moses. Tried to bring the people back here. And now I'm running for my life. We failed, God. The promise is never going to happen. The nation's never going to return to you." Elijah's devastated. This isn't what it's supposed to look like when God shows up, right? What gives? Well, God shows him, verse 11. So he said, "Go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord." And behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. The Lord wasn't in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. The Lord wasn't in the fire. After the fire, a sound of a gentle blowing. It came about when Elijah heard it. He wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah thought he knew what it was supposed to look like when God showed up. In Job 38, God shows up to Job in the thunder and in the wind. The book of Exodus, God shows up to Moses on Sinai with lightning and thunder and fire. Everything Elijah knew, everything Elijah had read, everything Elijah expected was that when God showed up big. God showed up with a flash and a bang in power. So Elijah assumed that the fire and the wind and the lightning was the way God always showed up. The only way God could show up. But here on the mountain, the same mountain where God showed up with fire, God shows up with a whisper. But he shows up. That's the point for Elijah. God's not obligated to accomplish his will our way. God has all kinds of arrows in his quiver. He's not just limited to the flash and the bang. Not limited to our definition of success. He's not limited to the overwhelming. The fact that he doesn't show up in the way that we thought he ought to doesn't mean he hasn't shown up. The fact that your kid is struggling doesn't mean God's not working. The fact that your influence seems to be shrinking instead of growing doesn't mean God's not using your influence. It may mean that your definition of success is different from his from now. God whispers, Elijah, what are you doing here? And Elijah gives him the same answer. Look at verse 14. Then he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the son of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, turned down thine altars, and killed thy prophets with a sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. It's like Elijah saying, okay, God, we're together on the theology, but I'm really trying to be faithful here. What's the next step? So God reveals it. Not only just Elijah's next step, but that Elijah has an extremely limited perspective of what God's up to. Look at verse 15. The Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you've arrived, you'll anoint Hazael, king of Aram, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi. And you shall anoint king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. And it shall come about, the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu, shall be put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha, will put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. God shows Elijah something that we always know when we're looking at the lives of other people. We rarely know when we're talking about our own lives. God always takes the long view. God's in the business of planning for generations, not just moments. And God's going to use Elijah. But God's going to use Elijah in a bigger sense than Elijah ever dreamed. Not just in Elijah's generation. God has a plan that's bigger than Elijah, even bigger than Elijah's lifetime. That's what he's calling. That's what he's inviting Elijah to be a part of. He's inviting him into the long view. In fact, if you want to see something encouraging that will totally blow your perspective this week, look at Mark chapter 9 this week. When Jesus takes three of his guys up on the Mount of Transfiguration, he transfigures himself. He gives them a glimpse of what the kingdom will look like, what the future will be when God does bring the nation of Israel back together and fully and completely, along with people from every tribe and tongue and nation, and Jesus rules and reigns in righteousness and glory for 1,000 years as the king and ushers in the eternal state. Jesus shows them a glimpse there on the Mount of Transfiguration in Mark chapter 9. Guess who else is there to see it? Hundreds of years after Elijah has died, God's still revealing more about his plan, even to Elijah. Elijah shows up on that mountain to get a glimpse of a longer view of success that God would and will bring through Jesus Christ himself. Even though Elijah's desire was a good and holy desire, God's idea of success took a longer view. And Elijah's desire was a holy desire, wasn't it? It was a good desire. It's the last thing I want us to see about this whole episode. We can't afford to miss. See, it would be tempting to paint Elijah as just a whiny baby. You know, he's pouting in a cave somewhere because God wouldn't give him what he wants. But do you notice what Elijah keeps coming back to? You notice what he keeps saying over and over and over? It's not just that his life is wrecked because of something selfish that Elijah wants. Elijah's upset because he wants what God wants, right? I mean, don't miss this. Elijah's desire was a holy desire. a more holy desire than potentially any of our desires in this room. Look what he said. He says, God, I want your name to go out. I wanted your name to be held high. I wanted the people of this nation who have all walked away to see who you are, the people who are worshiping other gods, I wanted them to know your power. I wanted them to see you. I wanted them to know you. I wanted them to walk with you. I wanted them to return to you. For Elijah, the spread of the name, fame of the God of the universe is so core to his life that when God's name isn't worshiped and God's word doesn't go out like Elijah thought it should, his whole life comes undone. I mean, in some ways, we ought to spend less time trying to fix Elijah's emptiness and allow him to fix ours, right? I mean, Elijah had dedicated his whole life to something good and holy and right and admirable. But it turns out even in that, Elijah had fallen victim to some of the exact same idolatry that he'd given his life to fighting against. Elijah had a godly mission, but he wanted his godly mission to work out the way Elijah thought it would work out if Elijah was God. He wanted it to work out in the way that Elijah expected, in the timing that Elijah demanded. He wanted to control the outcome. He wanted a God and a mission and a story that he was in control of. That's something really important you learn about Elijah here that I don't want any of us to miss. Sometimes it takes being empty to find out what we've been full of. Sometimes it takes being empty to find out what we've been full of. Sometimes when we're running on empty, we find out what filled us up. We find ourselves running on empty, we figure out where our hope was found. That's true for Elijah. That can be true for every single one of us. What are the things that make you want to give up and quit? What are the things that paralyze you to the point that when you should be living on mission, you find yourself living in a cave, empty with fear? What are the things that, if they were to disappear from your life, would cause you to lose all hope? What are the things that if God didn't give them to you, you'd wonder if it was worth living for God at all? When we find ourselves running on empty, we do well to ask ourselves, empty of what? Where were we finding our hope? Where were we finding our identity? Where were we finding our definition of success? Because even in the most holy, good, right dreams of what God could do in us and through us, it's possible to seek our hope and our identity and our fulfillment and all the wrong things. And Elijah's life is a reminder for our life. God's seeking hearts that are fully his, completely his, where our source of identity and strength and hope and provision and mission and the story arc of our whole life are found in him. And sometimes one of the greatest gifts that God can give us is to empty us of our false hopes for the future, our false senses of identity, our false definitions of success, so that we can find our hope and our identity and our success in the one who will never disappoint. Not when the full story's told. To find our hope and our identity and our success and our mission and the story arc of our life in the God of the universe who sometimes whispers.